Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Alexa, who is Adam Ferrara?
Adam Ferrara is an American actor and comedian known for playing the roles of Chief Needles Nelson on Rescue Me, Sergeant Frank Fiorelli opposite Edie Falco on Nurse Jackie. He was a co-host on the U.S. version of Top Gear. He has had 3 Comedy Central specials and his new album is called It's Scary in Here. Adam's new podcast is a big hit and available everywhere.
Sounds like it could be funny.
Sounds to me like 30 minutes you'll never get back.
Hi guys, thank you for joining us. If you're checking us out for the first time or coming back again, either way, we are glad you are here. And we have a great show for you again this week. My guest in the ADD interview, you know him from Stranger Things, Mad About You, The Kominsky Method, and his new project is called There's Johnny on the Peacock. It's my pal, actor, comedian, writer, director, Paul Reiser. And we want to welcome everyone from our Talk to Me Tuesday family. That's our conversation we have every week, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. Go to my website, click the link, and join us. And our superfan shout-out are for John and Karen Mastro Giovanni. Say hello, kids.
Hello, guys.
Yes.
John and Karen, how you guys doing?
Yeah.
Hey, Giovanni.
Mastro Giovanni. They are, John and Karen, are Christina's parents. Christina Sales is a member of our Talk to Me Tuesday family. I got a nice email, said, can mom and dad have a super fan shout out? So there you go. Because here at the Adam Ferrara podcast, we like to take care of our people.
Christina's parents.
I probably butchered the last name, but there it is.
You're
Italian. Hello, parents of Christina.
There you go. And we are coming to you from Abbey Normal Studios. I took the name Abbey Normal from Young Frankenstein. And Abbey Road for the Beatles to name the studio.
It actually describes your personality.
Okay. I was going somewhere, but now we're here. What do you mean?
Well, you know,
let's all just jump on Ferrara. I love it.
What?
The Young Frankenstein mixed with the Beatles.
That's true. Okay. I thought you said the Young Frankenstein.
An insect.
What's an insect?
The Beatles.
An insect?
An insect, yes. With a monster.
An insect with a monster. Thank you. You know what I am to my wife? I'm a murder hornet. That's what I am.
I think those Beatles are spelled differently, though.
Yes. Beatles is B-E-A-T because it's beat music. It was a spelling thing. John did that way before the rappers.
Yeah, I thought he was kind of making fun of themselves saying beatless.
No, beat. It's a beat music.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was it about.
Wasn't that the story that he had the dream of the naked man on the pie that said, you shall be Beatles with an A?
And we were.
Yeah. And we were.
I saw That's a man on a it. Flaming pie. He came to me and said, you're Beatles with an A, and we are. And Paul went like this. John, what is wrong with you? John, have you suffered a head wound?
Funny.
I'm in a Beatles mood today because I was listening to John Lennon. And I had a beautiful boy.
Oh, I love that song.
That he wrote for Sean.
Yeah, I love that song.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a neat story about Sean.
The chair recognizes the lady from Santa Monica. Yes, Doc.
Well, it was just like one of those things that happened. I was going to be working for Eileen Getty.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was a go, but I had to meet her mom because she's a trust fund person. So yeah.
You don't get a museum and all that cash. They don't just give you that. You got to go through somebody. But yeah, go ahead.
I had to be approved.
Yes, of course you did.
So anyway, she was so nice. She's like, and she's like, my mom's leaving tonight. Mm-hmm. Can you come back and meet her? And I said, it's my birthday. They're going to, you know, celebrate and all that. They said, oh, that's interesting. I believe she said godson, his birthday is tonight too. Why don't you celebrate it with him?
Okay.
I have plenty of, you know, cake, everything. Mm-hmm. Invite who you want.
The Gettys whatever. Have a lot of cake. So yeah.
Yeah.
You weren't going to be in imposition.
So anyway, so I get there. I'm like, you know, I kind of felt like I know how it is when you're tight on schedule. So I said, okay, I'll come. So I met the mom and everything went well. And I was in the kitchen. She ran to get something. And she says, oh, did I hear a knock at the door? Do you mind answering it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no. And so I go answer the kitchen door. And it was Sean Lennon.
So Sean Lennon's the godson.
And wow. We celebrated our birthday together.
And you're born on the same day?
Yeah.
Along with John.
Oh,
that's
really?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
John Lennon, yeah. Sean Lennon have the same birthday. And my wife. So that's 6 degrees of separation. You know what that means, boys? I married Kevin Bacon.
Bullet for you.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
You have the same birthday as Sean. I was listening to Beautiful Boy about Sean today. And Phil, I thought of you while I was listening to John Lennon.
You did?
I did. Yeah. I'm listening to Beautiful Boy. There's a line in it that always makes me think of you, Phil. It's digestion happens when you're busy making other plans.
Couldn't have been a sincere thought. No.
That has some strange story attached to it. I just know.
Yes. I Everything can only does. Imagine.
Okay. Yeah. You wanted Phil's looking for an apartment again because I guess it's time.
Yes, it's that time in my life where I'm looking for the geographical cure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll last. How long will it last me? About 2 weeks?
Yeah. He'll be happy. You're happy right now because you're excited about new things. I'm going to come over. I'm going to help you. We're going to laugh. You're my friend. We've been through this before, so it's not like we got to figure it out. I don't think we unpacked shit from the last time, to be honest with you. Then the movies are going to come. You're going to go to your new place. I'm going to get the phone calls. This is nice. This is great. I'm inspired. I'm going to write an opera. And he's going to start. He'll start.
I'm going to write an opera. Yeah. I am.
Fade in. Ah, Carmen. She's not dead. You know, whatever he's going to write. And he's going to be happy for about, give him about 2 weeks. And all of a sudden he's like, dude, I got a neighbor. I don't know what she does in the morning. She's making cappuccino in a sink, but it happens whenever I'm trying to sleep.
Yep. Yeah. 8:30 a.m.
Yeah, he'll find something.
I'm telling you, I got to go, man. I'm here 5 years. The walls are closing in. I already have a car. I already bought that distraction. Yeah. This is the next thing.
Thank
this
God.
Is the next thing.
Oh, look, I'd rather have this than I love her, man. Because then
I was going to say, where did marriage?
Wait a minute. It's one of the options.
Mark, the last girl, he'll call me up. Dude, I met this girl. I was in the store. She looked at me. I looked at her, and there was a connection. Phil, she handed you your dry cleaning.
She was selling you a car.
Yeah.
She was the hostess showing you your seat, sir.
Yeah. He sees love in everybody, you know. He's 10 seconds away from being John Cusack holding up a boombox in a parking lot.
Which was romantic.
Which was all romantic, right. But...
Phil, a lot of batteries.
Yeah.
Anyway, Phil has a new apartment, and I will support any move you make, Phil. But getting back to digestion happens while you're busy making other plans. So I get the phone call. Phil's looking for an apartment, and he doesn't want this apartment. He leaves, but then he has to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
So what does he do? That I would have went somewhere, a gas station, done something. Now, Phil goes back in, knocks on the door, and talks to the lady that just showed him the apartment he passed on. Excuse me. I want to thank you for your time. I really have to go to the bathroom. Would it be possible? And I go, Phil, you did? He goes, yeah, I did. And Ted, tell him what you did.
I did. First of all, I had to go, man. And I was on the Beechwood Drive walking up and down. There were no bathrooms anywhere. And I had to go. And it was an emergency. And I just said, and I didn't tell her I didn't want the place. I said, I'll let you know. So, but I went back in and I go, is there a public restroom? She's like, and she looks at me. She didn't like me to begin with. She just didn't. You know, I caught that. It was a bad vibe all around. She didn't like me.
This is the one girl he doesn't have a connection with. Okay, go ahead.
I go, well, can I use the bathroom in the apartment? Since it's, she looks at me like I asked for money or something. She was like, you know, okay, we'll make it fast. I was like, all right.
See, honey, what you guys don't understand about Phil is Phil's like a garbage truck with no conscience. He'll dump anywhere.
Oh my God.
This was not numero uno. This was numero duo.
This was numero dos.
Ew.
Yes.
Wow.
All right.
You yeah. really don't care. You're like, I'm not like
Mark.
It's a strange bathroom. Woman hates me. Strangers rolling through here. I don't care.
I couldn't help it. I had to go. And then I knew I'm not going to be able to go anywhere else. I got to look at 10 more apartments. Where am I going to go? Where am I going to go? So she lets me in. And then, you know, and now she's waiting. I'm like, she's waiting for me. So I'm in the bathroom.
She doesn't
and
trust you alone.
I don't. What am I going to steal? The toilet lid? What am I going to steal? So anyway, yeah. And so I'm going. And here's my thought. Here's my only thought while I'm doing this. Oh, my God. This is going on the podcast.
And you weren't wrong.
Adam is going to have a field day with this. And I have to tell him.
So wait a minute. Did she know that you had to unload lunch?
No. Okay. She had no. Can I use the bed? Okay. We'll make it quick. I have more showings.
Right. Okay. All right.
And she's yelling. You know, I'm like, Jesus, you know. And then I look to my left, and this is your worst nightmare. Okay, I look to my left. What did I not see?
A door on the bathroom. That would be my
folks.
Nightmare.
Nope, the door was there. What wasn't there was toilet paper.
Oh, second worst.
So yeah.
So what did
you
do?
Anyway, I finish up. I'm like, what am I gonna? I had no choice. I pulled my pants up, and now I'm walking very like.
Oh, that's disgusting. Oh. I could have thought of a couple different.
Yeah,
solutions.
I would sacrifice a sock or something.
No,
yeah.
Not that. You could do a little bidet.
Bidet?
You sit on the
end. Stand on your head and shove your ass under the sink.
No, this
that's exactly what I was going to do with the lady listening to me. Turn on the tub. What are you doing in there? She was standing right outside, right in the living room.
I'm checking water pressure.
And hardwood floor, so the whole place is echoey.
Oh, and what did you eat?
Lentil soup.
Oh, God.
So
you had beans for lunch. So this was sound and fury.
Exactly.
And she's outside and she's yelling. So does she hear what's going on in there?
First of all, she knocks. Well, are you done? Jesus. No, I'm kidding.
That's the worst.
Yeah. My bodily fluids have one speed. Can you back off? I'll lock up. Oh, I'll lock up when I leave. That's okay. I'll wait. Of course you will. Of course you will.
So she's outside. She's waiting. You got fudge butt.
Yeah,
right.
I'm walking out like with my legs.
Did you wash your hands?
Tight ass walk. No, with what? There's nothing to wash my hands with.
Water.
Yeah, there's water. Soap.
I did put my hands under the. There's no towel. There's no soap. I had to wait till I got to my car and sanitize. That's what I did.
Okay, so you open up the door.
Yeah.
Did you say thank you?
Of course.
And then what did she say?
Then I said okay, thanks, and I just wanted to get out of there quick.
Well, you were running away from what was coming out of that room.
Yeah, because I knew. I just knew. And then about 10 seconds later, I hear, oh, my God.
Because you didn't flush?
No. No, I flushed. It was, again, lentil soup.
Oh, the smell.
Yeah, that sound and fury. That's okay. The fury.
Okay, I get it now. You boys have complimented
with a
language.
Nice a fragrance.
Yeah.
So now I'm walking down the hallway. She pops her head out of the door and she goes, this is an open house. I have to show this place all day today. Okay, thanks. Thank you.
She's yelling at you as you're leaving the scene of the crime.
Yes, she was. Oh, my God. This is an open house. Okay.
You're lucky she didn't have her phone out.
Oh, my God.
She's leaving the door open, fanning. Can we stop it?
Well, in her defense, Phil, if the next person coming through there is like, oh, what is this, a half bath? Oh, my God. What happened to
yes.
here?
Yes.
I just hope you went home after that, right?
I went to there was a grocery store and they had a bathroom and I, you know, took care of business in there.
Hey, that's good. You know, firebomb another place.
Yeah, finish the job.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant. Digestion is what happens when you're busy making other plans.
That's called a hard day's night.
See, I thought that was life is what happens to you when you're making other plans.
Yeah, well, in Phil's case, it's digestion. Everyone else, it's life.
I don't know.
Yeah, life is what happens when you're busy making other plans was a lyric that came up in the interview with
Paul and myself. Paul, like me, is a really big Beatles fan, and I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize to Paul that this was the opening of his episode. But I really enjoyed catching up with my friend. So give a listen to this, and we will see you on the other side.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, my God, it stinks in here.
You're listening to the Adam Ferrara podcast. This is 30 minutes you'll never get back. Now that you know, I'm out of it.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now, all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hi, guys. I got some stand-up dates for you. December 10th through the 12th, I will be at Hilarities in Cleveland, Ohio. December 18th and 19th, I will be at the Arlington Draft House in Arlington, Virginia. And for New Year's Eve, I will be at the Helium in St. Louis. If you can make any of these dates, please come up after the show and let me thank you for all the love and support you've shown me and this podcast. All right. Go on, get out of here.
Pay attention when I'm talking to you, boy.
ADHD, it's not just for kids.
Nice boy, but doesn't listen to a word you say.
Welcome to the ADD interview. It's not that you're not interesting, it's just that I can't focus. And my guest this week is...
Oh, look, a bird! I am very excited to talk to my guest this week. He is an actor, comedian, author, classical pianist, and a man who has no doubt been in your living room. You know him from Mad About You, Stranger Things, The Kominsky Method, and his new project is called There's Johnny, now streaming on the Peacock. He is very funny and someone I always look forward to seeing in a green room. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, help me welcome my pal Paul Reiser. How are you, baby?
Well, that was a nice, very nice, lofty introduction.
Well, I just read the IMDb. You did all this.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's an interesting thing, and we can talk about anything. But, you know, it's this There's Johnny, which is new, but it's not really new. But yeah. It's show. I think we talked about it last time I saw you at the Comedy Magic Club. Mm-hmm. We did the show, and it was aired on Hulu for 2 years. Didn't have a lot of publicity. It was in the Guinness Book of Records, the least promoted show in the history of broadcast. which I'll tell you about. But anyway, so I have always, you know, been comforted by the fact that in the world we live in now, shows don't have to be an instant hit because you watch it when you get to it. I'm watching shows, you know, that I missed 2 years ago or 3 years ago. So I said, there's Johnny. I'm very proud of it. It's a wonderful show. It'll be on. It's there. It's on Hulu. Then somebody said, I try to watch it on Hulu. It's gone. I went, how can it be gone?
Yeah.
And then I made a call and they went, yeah, we only had it contractually for 2 years. I went, so leave it there. What do you got? You know, what, yeah, yeah. Bothering anybody? But somebody had to go in at night and say, take, boosh. They had to throw it out, actively lose it.
Right.
It was an interesting thing because this show has had such a long and funny path. And I'm really thrilled that it's now going to be airing, but specifically it's airing on Peacock because it's a, you know, it's about the Tonight Show, right? So, I mean, literally the NBC Peacock is in our opening credits. Right. So it's like, it's about the Tonight Show, 1972. And then furthermore, it stars Jane Levy, who at the time was this wonderful, lovely actress, that phenomenal actress. But since the show, we did our show, she's now the star of our own show, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. Mm-hmm. So we said, Peacock, you can help two shows of yours here.
Sure.
So, but anyway, so yeah, so it was a very strange thing. When I was on Hulu, they said, you know, it's a strange thing because we have two types of shows. We have original shows that we created, and then we have libraries, like we'll buy 30 Rock, you know, 7 years ago. Yeah. She said, your show is neither of those. It's sort of, it was 1 year, but we didn't create it. And so they treated it, I said, it was sort of like a state mandated foster child. Like, this kid's going to live with you.
Right.
You're going to feed it, God damn it. And I'll go, all right, but we're not giving him steak, just so you know that. We're going to
do what you said. Comics menu.
Well, right. We'll do what you said, but we're not going to do it lovingly. So it never got the promotion. So now I'm just, anyway, so I'm not in it. I wrote it with my buddy David Simon, and great people are in it. So I was so proud of how this came out that I'm thrilled that it's now finding a home again.
Yeah, and it was one of the things, like, because I remember you mentioning it through last time I saw you, but I found a quote of yours that kind of connects to that show's journey and everything else. You said, almost everything that has impacted my career was an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
don't you think that's true of most people in their own life? I mean, like, you can make, what's that, you know, you know, John Lennon had that great song, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans.
Yeah. Right?
So here's what I have planned, and the powers that be are going, yeah, that's nice, but watch this.
Yeah, but that's but even like in going back and finding examples of that, because I knew about the diner story, the movie Diner, of course, iconic. You were in it. It was one of your first things. Am I correct?
It was my very first job, and it was totally an accident because I walked into the casting office by accident on the right day. Mm-hmm. And so that opened up things. But, you know, and because of Diner, it was how I got on The Tonight Show for the first time as a comic. Because I wasn't really getting too warm a welcome as a comic. But when they said, oh, he's a young guy and he's got a movie coming out this week, okay. Right. So that sort of launched that.
Yeah. And
so many things are accidental. You know, I mean, I'm in the middle. People say, wow, you're on two hit shows on Netflix. You must be very clever. I didn't mean to be on either one of them. You know, Kaminsky Method happened because I'm an old buddy of Chuck Lorre's, and I just called him after the first season. Mm-hmm. And I said, hey, what a great show. It was beautifully written and, you know, and it's so different than than what he usually does. And I jokingly said to him, I said, let's you and me come up with an idea like that. You know, two guys sitting in a car. I could do that for hours. And he said, well, would you like to be on this one? I went, yes, please. He said, I'm thinking of a role and, you know, it was Michael Douglas's friend and that could be fun. I went, okay. And then like a month later, I'm doing Kaminsky Method. So, you know, yeah, you never know. And how things happen or who's seeing, you know, that's the crazy thing. It's not, you know, we're used to seeing when there's 200 people in the audience or 500, whatever, or 8 people in the audience. Right. Those are the people hearing our jokes. You're doing this. You have no idea how many people or who's out there that may be impacted by what you're saying or doing. And it's all a happy accident.
Yeah. And the collective energies that make things happen. I mean, I wanted to ask you about the theme song for Mad About You. You know, most people don't know you're a classical pianist.
So I kind of majored that in college, not because I was that good or that I was going to plan to be a pianist. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other level. It's not even like NBA, but like you got, there's like 10 guys who can do it. But because I already played, I thought, well, this, I'll be able to pick up some extra credits and I'll graduate sooner this way. But anyway, so yeah, I always played piano. I was in a little band, you know, when I was 12, everybody had a garage band. And when Mad About You was coming out, like 2 weeks before we premiered in 92, and we didn't really have a theme song. And a buddy of mine, we submitted one or two, and nobody really was enamored with them. Mm-hmm. And I was on a plane with Helen Hunt going to New York. And in the airport, we bump into Don Was, who she knew from some casual thing. Mm. Casual thing, a friend of a friend. And so we're chatting, and I said, yeah, we don't really have a song. He goes, well, let's you and me write one. I went, what do you mean, write one? He goes, yeah, come on, we'll write one. I said, well, we'd have to do it, you know, like today. He goes, yeah, come to the studio tonight when we land in New York. Come tonight. I went, okay. And he's just one of, and I learned so much from that. Like Don Was produces the Stones and Willie Nelson and Ringo, I mean, and everybody. I mean, he's just, and Bonnie Raitt. Yeah. He really broke open producing Bonnie Raitt. He's a great musician, and he's just this kind of can-do guy that, like, sure, we'll do that. So I remember I went to his studio, and I remember he was finishing up a session with Felix Cavallari. And I'm going,
ah, the Rascals.
I just stepped into, you know, some time. Wow, Felix Cavallari from the Rascals. Look at that. And Don goes, what do you got? I said, I don't know. And I started playing the piano, and he picked up his guitar, and we just banged out this little melody. And he said, what are the words? He said, well, just, you know, scat something. Mm-hmm. So I was going, the scat about a that. I don't know, no idea. And he goes, don't record that. That's that's me in the shower. Don't use them. He goes, no. And I remember he said, well, who do you think should sing? I said, well, I always thought Lyle Lovett would be the right sensibility. He goes, well, I know Lyle, I'll send it to him. I go, don't send him that. That's horrible. You know, I said, he goes, no, that's how it happened. I go, you're telling me Lyle Lovett, Grammy winning brilliant artist, is in a hotel on the road somewhere. And because of you, he's listening to a tape of me going, scat a super dab a fab a wabble. He goes, yeah. So Lyle didn't do it. He ended up doing, well, that's another happy accident. But anyway, so on the plane home, I wrote some words, and then he pulled together his you know, A-list of musicians. We recorded it, and the late, great Andrew Gold, who did Lonely Boy and Thank You for Being a Friend, recorded it, and then it was on the air, and everybody seemed to love it. I've had over the years, people go, you know, we got married to that theme song. I'm like, wow, okay, good luck.
And all because you ran into Don Was in an Apple.
Yeah, all because of that. And then cut to 30 years later, a year ago exactly, when we did the reboot, we did 12 episodes of Mad About You 2.0. Mm-hmm. And now I've since become friends with Lyle. He ended up being an actor on the show. And I call him, I said, all right, here's your second chance. Would you like to do the theme song? He goes, I would love to. He goes, I'm an idiot. And he said, I kicked myself that I said no the first time. I said, well, let's do it. So he did it. And so the new shows have Lyle Lovett.
That's great.
Life is funny.
I wore out my copy of Lyle Lovett and his large band. Just here I am. Yes, it's me. What a great song. And the thing about Mad About You is it struck me at the right moment because I had just gotten my first TV deal. And I'm like, I want to do that. And they're like, well, we already have that. But your comedy and we chatted briefly about
it. We already have that. Thank you.
Yeah, we process through our work. I think that's both our drive. I remember one of my favorite things you did is the thing about my folks with Peter Falk.
Oh, God bless you, man.
Yeah. And you told me you were processing your dad passing through that.
Yeah, the Peter Falk was an idol of mine. Really, the only actor that I, as a kid, was just enamored with. You know, I didn't grow up thinking I want to be an actor. Or, well, look at the brilliant work that Olivier is doing. I didn't know that. I just was drawn in when Peter Falk. It was like when dogs hear a certain whistle, like, what's that? And I just was in love with Peter. And my father loved Peter Falk, so I had this idea that Peter Falk should play my father. I just thought, well, that would be a good idea. And, you know, as you know, a lot of times people, all the things you want to do, they're not really waiting for you. So we have to do them. So I I said, well, I'll write the movie myself. And I wrote this story. It was the road trip that I never got to take with my dad that I wish I had taken. So it was a little bit of fantasy fulfillment. And I sent it to Peter Falk, who I didn't really know, but I told him about it. And he, you know, knew me enough to say, I'll read it. And, you know, one of the greatest moments of my life, he called about 11:30 at night. Jerry goes, well, this is fantastic. I just read this. Let's go do this. I went, wait a minute. Are you saying yes? He goes, oh, this is beautiful. Because I was sitting by the phone waiting, and came, and I woke up my wife. I said, Peter Falk just said yes. I said, I don't even have to make the movie. That was enough. That he read it and that he validated me. He said, yes, this is good. Yes, this is me. Yes, you and I would be good. Yes, let's go do it. I'm done.
Yeah.
The rest is all icing. And then we got to make it, and every day was, you know. Did you ever have anybody that you looked up to and then you got to meet them and they actually were as great as you
hoped? Absolutely, yeah. I was in the Barnes & Noble, you know, back when they had bookstores, Paul.
I remember those.
And I was standing there, and The Odd Couple here in New York was this TV series was huge for me. And Tony Randall had just passed away, and Klugman wrote a book called Dear Tony. I read it standing up in the aisle, turned it over, and it was written by a guy named Burton Rocks, who I know from the Friars Club. So I called Burton. I said, can you get Jack a note? And he goes, yeah. And I wrote him a note. Longtime fan, Mr. Klugman, blah, blah, blah. He left my number. Thank you so much for writing the book, and thank you for, you know, impacting my childhood and my comedy. Called me up.
Adam, it's Jack Klugman. I know the voice sounds bad, but it doesn't hurt. When are you coming to L.A.?
I said, I'm coming for pilot season, Jack.
Call me. We're going to dinner.
Wow.
Drove down to PCH. He met me at that you know, that Italian restaurant on the PCH right across. It's before you get to Zuma Beach. Like that.
Yes, I know exactly. Yes.
Begins with a G. I can't remember it. And
Georgios.
Yeah, Georgios. He walked across the street. He goes,
I got the condo across the street. Tony made me buy before I gambled away the money. Let's eat.
Sat with me, Paul, for 2.5 hours, me and my manager, Peter, and just told me story after story after story.
It's an interesting thing, you know. It's a very fine line. You don't want to bother people. But on the other hand, people do like finding out that somebody likes them, you know, or admires their work. So, you know, I've been lucky enough. That's really the greatest part of being in this sort of family, in this industry, this community. It's like you bump into people that you liked and get to work with. The name, Lyle Lovett did the theme song, going back, with Keisha Lewis. Keisha Lewis, and I was blocking, I couldn't come up with her last name. Keisha Lewis, who was actually in the Mad About You reboot. She's a fantastic Broadway star, huge star, and unbelievable voice. And the two of them do this duet, because we wanted it to be a duet between a guy and a woman. So Keisha and Lyle, they came out great. Anyway, I'm just throwing that in, because if she was watching your thing, she'd go, yeah, asshole didn't say my name. I just literally couldn't come up with Keisha's last name.
Well, I mean, we're both Beatles fans, really big Beatles.
Yes.
You had Yoko on this.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that was silly. That was, and again, what I was saying is that sometimes, you know, if you have any kind of sense of humility or caution, you go, I don't want to bother these people. Mm-hmm. And then other times you go, you can ask and they can respond. And we invited Yoko to be on The Mad About You, and she said yes. Because she knew that we were treating her and John's memory with love, and you know, she had seen an episode, and she knew us, and she felt safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we had Jerry Lewis on the show, and I said, "Well, you must have done a lot of half hours." He goes, "First one. This is the first one. Nobody ever called me." I went, what do you mean? No, because it's like the beautiful woman that everyone's too afraid to ask to dance, and nobody's dancing. And it's like, we had Yoko, and you know, and that was. I just did a thing on the Beatles station, and I was talking about this from that perspective. But we were, you know, all kind of, besides, not only did we love Yoko and, you know, how much the Beatles meant to us, but we were aware that Yoko is on a comedy. This is new. This is really new. And it was an interesting thing for me, because it meeting her and hearing her talk about John helped me get out of my idolatry. And I still revere, worship, love, all those things.
Sure.
But you suddenly realize, oh, he was the husband of this lovely woman. And, you know, and they were talking, she was sharing some stories, and they're going, on one hand, you go, oh, wow, it's a Beatles story. I go, but it's her husband. And it just sort of, anybody that you ever meet is, you know, is a person and has, you know, a life. But I remember she was saying so casually, oh, yeah, John would have really liked this show. I went, okay. It's about love. It's about a couple, and it's about devotion. Went, I don't need any other review but mm-hmm. that, you know. And then as you know, the kicker was, we used to do these under credits at the end. We would do these little pieces that were sort of sometimes break the fourth wall and just sort of not real. And we had Yoko, and cameras are running, and audience is there, or the clock is running, and we didn't have an appropriate ending. We said, well, what can we do? We have Yoko, we have the, and we're all the writers are going, what about this one? And she kind of very humbly says, you know, I have an idea. She said, you know, John and I always said to each other, whenever we have the opportunity, we just want to put the message of give peace a chance out there. So maybe, you know, you and Helen and I could all be in bed, and we could just say, give peace a chance. We went, okay.
Brilliant.
Okay. And like, and then, so we get into bed, like the, you know, the piece, the bed ends that they did.
Montreal, yeah.
And Helen and I in our Mad About You marital bed, and in the middle is Yoko Ono. And we're just reading the paper, and the theme song is playing, and she just looks in the camera and goes, give peace a chance. And then I said, this is all we're saying. And we're like, well, I just blended John and Yoko with Mad About You in one sentence. And it was a thrill. And there's a little look where Helen and I look at each other, sort of stepping out of the reality going, are you fucking kidding me? Well, we're in a bed with Yoko Ono. Okay. That happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If I could go back and just ask you, and if you're comfortable, and if you're not, it's fine too. Is there one thing you remember Yoko said to you about John that stuck with you and balanced out the imperial man?
You know, I don't know that she shared anything that personal. It was just in talking to her, you realize, you know, you have suddenly this live human emotion of, oh, this is your husband who was mm-hmm. taken from us and taken from you. And so it, something in the back of my brain went, oh, you can't make him Jesus or Zeus. He's a guy. But I remember talking to, you know, it's weird now. I don't remember this was something I heard in an interview or I spoke to him, but she came with Sean, who was a teenager, and she came mm-hmm. with Elliot Mintz, who was their personal guy, buddy.
Wonderful skin Elliot has. I've seen him in many interviews.
And a lovely, very soothing, therapeutic voice. Mm-hmm. He actually used to be a shrink, which made sense because he would talk and he would just feel calm. But I remember somewhere hearing him say, and I literally don't remember if he told to us or I was on an interview, you know, that Yoko would always check the horoscopes. And that was part of the joke that, like, I was so nervous, like, in the show. Like, oh, Jamie, whatever you do, don't ask her about the Beatles and don't say she broke up the Beatles. And, of course, she would bring it up. And she would say, you know, people think I broke up the Beatles. I go, oh, I never said that. You know, but Yoko herself literally offered that as to us. And I had literally been with our writers going, Don't even go near that.
Yeah.
Of course, she brought it up. We said, okay, that's the show. The show is I'm tripping over myself to be courteous and reverent. And she's going, relax. But the thing, and she would always check the horoscopes and so on, and check the stars and do everything. And so, to a naive, ignorant brain like mine or many others, I'm sure you go, so if you knew all that and you could tell the future, like, which is not really what that is at all, but like, well, then couldn't you have avoided, you know, what happened and
make a left on?
Make a left. Don't talk to. And he'd say, and he said, yeah, she did all that. And he believed whatever he believed. He goes, but they were a married couple. So he didn't do everything she said. she may have said, don't take a left. He goes, honey, I'm taking a look. And which is, we didn't talk about that day, right, that horrible day that he was, you know, killed. But just in concept, like, well, because it's so silly to just because somebody believes in the stars doesn't in any way presume that you can walk through life and make it, you know, foolproof. But his thing of like, yeah, there were just a couple and they fought, obviously, famously, separated famously and loved famously. But that, yeah, just because she said take a raincoat doesn't mean he took a raincoat.
Yeah.
Like, oh, of course.
See, that was it, because we both share those. I remember, and we were in agreement when you told me you played the Lady Madonna piano.
Oh, right.
And you told me you played the Let It Be piano in Abbey Road.
Yeah,
I remember.
I can't believe you remember that.
We were 2 12-year-olds. I went, come on. And you went, no, really? Went, get out of here. And you were at Abbey Road, and you got to play the upright Lady Madonna
piano. Somebody pulled a string, and we got in. My family was in London, and we got into Abbey Road. And my kids were younger, and they a little bit got it, but mm-hmm. they didn't get it. And it's, you know, it's... It's not just like, oh, even seeing the Beatles' childhood home. This is literally the physical space,
yeah,
in which all the music that you nurtured and grew on, that you embraced your whole life, came out of these four walls. And when they looked up to George Martin, that was where he said, oh my God. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went to the bathroom and we said, so they would pee here? This is where John would pee and follow me? And he said, well, pee and also get high. It's like, okay, right. But this was the little space. Yeah. No, it was 50 years later. It had been remodeled and cleaned up a bit. But, yeah, when you're in a physical space, there's something magical about the history of it. And they said, this is the piano. And it's like, and you're letting any idiot just play it? No, not any idiot. Idiots that got in.
Yeah, I know. I sat in the original Batmobile, the one that.
How did that happen?
I was at Barrett Jackson, the auto auction. They had a showroom, and I had done some press for them. It was when I was on Top Gear, and that's the original one that sold for like $4 million. And I sat in it, and they go, "No, this isn't a fiberglass replica. This is the one." Adam West.
Wow.
And I sat right in that car, so I got the same kind of
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Well, you had, like, when I saw Mad About You, it was, I got the same feeling I got about The Odd Couple. It was New York City. It was a couple. It was about love. It was a place I wanted to be and people I wanted to be with. Because I'm a Long Island kid. I'm a bridge and tunnel kid. And our families, our parents got out of the city and we fought like hell to get back in. So... Between that and your comedy, because we're very similar. You were a pointer to me. I was a Pryor kid, Richard Pryor kid. But the stuff you were doing that I saw was confirmation that I was on the right path.
Yeah, that's nice.
It can be done. It's like I can be funny and I can be real and I can have a heart and I can explore other emotions.
That's nice. Say yeah, well,
paved that.
Look, it worked out. You did good.
Ah, we did all right. And the thing, it was funny because I work with Jerry Adler a lot. And, you know, you start bullshitting on the set and everything. And he leaned over to me. He goes, thank you. I go, why? He goes, everyone asked me about Sopranos. You're asking me about Mad About You. Yeah, he was a really nice man.
Still with us, still doing well.
Yeah, last I heard. Part of that. He was, but he was part. I did a movie with Anne Ramsey. And I was asking her as well about the show. And there was a nice, it was nice to hear that what I saw on TV was coming from a genuine place. You know, it seemed like a very happy house, man.
It was a happy house. And we had, everybody was, it was really funny when we came back last year to do the 12, I'd seen Helen a lot and mm-hmm. seen everybody periodically, but when, as a group, we had never been together in 30 years, almost, no, 25 years or something. And, not only was it so great to see everybody and, you know, life changes and how are your kids and so on, but we just hit the ground running. It was like we had taken maybe a weekend off instead of 20 years. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, and then, you know, talk about a physical space. You get back into the actual part. We first read in a conference room somewhere. We read the script and it was great. It feels funny and so on. It all feels great. We knew how to write those characters. Then you get on the set and you just go, oh, we haven't been gone, have we? Because it's like going to your childhood home. It's like, yeah, I knew exactly 10 steps to the door. Takes longer. But literally, it's like, there was actually a line in one of the episodes of the new episodes where we're talking, and I'm walking, and the doorbell's ringing, and there's a couple of seconds of silence. I go, you know, years ago, I would have been there already. And I'm walking slower. It's taking me a minute. We used to have the time. We need 2.5 sentences from the kitchen to the living room door. And now 20 years later, I need four. I need four sentences or a slower delivery.
Now, when you wrote the Jamie character, you didn't have Helen in mind. I think you
had
dinner party.
No. You know what? I had the opposite of Helen. I was picturing, I mean, I didn't have an actress in mind, but I was picturing my own wife. Mm-hmm. And my wife could not look more different than Helen. My wife had brown hair and different features. And I think if anything, I would have said, whatever it is, it's not going to be a blonde actress. I'll tell you that right now. And then we happened to go to a dinner party, my wife and I, with about 8-10 people at Helen's house. We had a mutual friend. We were invited to this dinner party, and I had never met Helen, and she was, you know, lovely and funny and goofy and bright and everything. And as we walked out, I said to my wife, I said, what do you think about her as you? She went, I think she'd be great. And so when I called Helen the next day, I said, I know, I hate to be this guy, but mm-hmm. you might be this. And she was really clear in her head. She's told the story that I don't want to do TV. She was just starting to take off in movies. She goes, and I certainly don't want to be the wife of funny comedy boy. And right. She, you know, Gabe Kaplan's wife, and just go, oh, honey. You know, and I said, no, this is not that. This is a 50-50, you know. And she read it and said, oh, shit, I like this. And shit, and then I wasn't wanting to like this. Mm. Then she came over to my house, and we read it together. And she's so good. I've told this story before. There was a scene, it was in the kitchen or whatever, and we're in my house, and you know, we start reading, and she gets up, and she's cleaning my dishes, and she's in the sink. Because that's what it said in the script. But right. I didn't know that. I am thinking, I literally said, Helen, we have a woman comes in. She goes, huh? No, I go, oh my God, you're so good. I didn't even notice you. I mean, she can never sit still. Our running joke was seasons 1 and 2, you never saw her face. She was just a lovely blonde blur on the way out. But she was so real. And sitting in my house, I went, this feels like it's going to work, you and me doing this. So there you go.
That's great. Well, it's a show that had a big impact on me. You as a comic had a big impact on me. And we got a couple of more fan questions. I know you got to run, but you got time to answer 2 fan questions for me?
Only if people promise they will watch There's Johnny on Peacock. I don't know how you get Peacock. I don't understand.
You put out bread in the yard. And you
wait. No, not the actual Peacock. You have to. Is it an app? Is it part of NBC? I don't get it. I don't understand it, but figure out, you're younger. Figure out how to get Peacock.
Oh, good, Paul. I'm on CBS All Access. I can't. Well, I don't know how to get it.
No, I forget it. And everyone says, it's an app. I go, yeah, it's not going to happen.
Yeah. The 2 questions I have are, this is not my locker.
Yeah. This is not my locker.
Did you improv that?
Yes. That is a line from Beverly Hills Cop. So here's the funny story about that. You know, Eddie Murphy was, this is not a joke, Eddie Murphy was not the original star of Beverly Hills Cop. Do you know who was?
George Burns?
No, it was developed and it was going to be Sylvester Stallone.
No, come on.
And I got cast as the little, whatever my little part was.
Mm-hmm.
When Stallone was in, I go, wow, I'm going to get to be in the movie with Stallone. And I don't know, whatever happened, people leave and, you know, so I don't know what happened, but anyway, he left and then it went to Eddie Murphy, and Eddie had just had that huge success on SNL and then 48 Hours. Mm-hmm. So now Eddie Murphy's doing it. I'm going, oh, and I know Eddie because from the clubs, we knew each other. So I go, well, this is going to be so much fun. So when we get to play, so it was a lot more improvisational than might have been with any other actor because Eddie's so loose and because I knew each other. So I wasn't, you know, I think if I hadn't known him, I would have just been starstruck because he's so freaking great and talented. And he really, you know, I mean, he radiates still. He just, there's something that comes out of him that like, this is big. This guy's got it and always has. So anyway, so that became the sort of joke that he was being bawled out by the captain and I was in there still in the room. I think they didn't write to it. Like, am I here? Am I there? Am I listening? So I just started playing with like that. I was going to be a pain in the ass and like make myself a nuisance and lean in to the point that the captain would have to yell at me. And then I think it just ended. I go, oh, I'm in the wrong one. This is not my locker. It was a throwaway. I had no idea. I mean, literally to this day, people will come over to me, and it took me a long time to realize what it was, because people would come over. If they didn't do that line, they would do something like it. Mm-hmm. So I'm in an airport, minding my own business, waiting at the gate, and somebody will come over to me as if we were speaking, and we'll go, "Hey, this is not my suitcase." And I go, "What? This is not my suitcase." I go, "I didn't say it was your suitcase." "What? Oh, you're doing the—" I mean, it took me years to figure out, oh, I guess people remember that line somehow.
Yeah.
But
I'll be honest with you. I knew you improvised it. I wish that wasn't in the script.
Well, so if I remember, there was a, I did a show called Red Oaks on
Amazon.
Amazon. And last season, there's a scene, it's in a golf club, a country club, and we're in the locker room, and there's a scene, and the really funny young Canadian actor, Ennis Esmer, and we were just working on the scene, and I was just sort of mumbling to myself, like, can I get away with doing that here 40 years later? Mm-hmm. And I just go, "Oh, this is not my locker." And I was sort of just trying it out, and he heard me, goes, "Did you just say, are you going to say that?" I went, "I don't know." He goes, "Oh, you have." I go, "No, I can't. No, I can't. You just, you're really—" He goes, "You were going to do it." I said, "Yeah, I'm sorry you had to hear that, but I was just trying it out and it doesn't feel right." But I was going to try and do my own callback.
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. I just felt a little indulgent and break the framey.
But I tell you, it's those moments that people, they remember and they connect to and want to share with you, you know?
Like, yeah, and I know I will remember things in a movie that just like that. I remember Richard E. Grant, you know, mm-hmm. the British actor, was in L.A. Story.
Right.
Steve Martin. And he did a line that I've told the story on Jimmy Pardo, not that he's a competitor. Jimmy Pardo, we were working a club in Chicago or something, and on a day we went to see that movie. And we both fell out of our chairs laughing at a line. And it was not a joke, but he was chilly. They were on the beach and he said, "I'm chilly." And he runs away to get it. "I'm going to go get a sweater." And he runs away. And then a couple of minutes later, comes back with the sweater in his hand. He goes, "Oh, now I'm hot from running." and that just killed us. It's like he went to get a sweater, but in running, he was no longer cold. So that became a running joke with two knucklehead comedians.
Yeah.
Years later, I'm at some event or whatever, and I see Richard Grant. I said, "You know," and I didn't spring it on him. I said, "I got to tell you, boy, I always loved that line, but I'm hot from running." He went, "What's that?" I went, "You don't remember? It's the greatest thing." He went, "Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about." Okay. So it works both ways. I'm on both sides of that coin.
Yeah. One other question I had for you. Did Kevin Pollak prank you as Alan Arkin?
He did. And he got a little bit too much joy out of telling the story a lot. But Alan, yes, Kevin Pollak, those great voices.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going to be having dinner. Kevin and his wife and my and four of us, and we've been friends for years. And that afternoon, I get a call from Alan Arkin. "Oh, it's Alan Arkin." And, "Oh, maybe." I can't do it. And normally I might say, you know, if I was thinking clearly, I would go, "Well, that's clearly Kevin because we're having dinner today." But he didn't leave a number. He goes, "Call me." And not too long before that, I had reached out to Alan Arkin to play something on Mad About You. So, and we had met. So it wasn't crazy. It wasn't like, you know, somebody I never heard of. It wasn't. This is Ringo. Ringo is calling. So this one, I knew it was possible. So I had his number and I call. I said, "Alan, it's Paul Reiser. You know, were you looking for me? I'm here. Here's my number again." We go to dinner, and Kevin, I don't mention it, and then Kevin says mentioned something about Alan Arkin, and I didn't want to be cool and say, "Oh yeah, he called me today." Right. I just sat on it, and apparently it was frustrating him. And finally, he said, "You ever talk to Alan?" I said, "Well, you know, I have." He goes, "Did he call you today around 4 o'clock?" I went, "Oh, you asshole. By the time we leave dinner, he gets home and he has a message on his machine from Alan saying, "Kevin, are you playing games with Paul Reiser? Why is Paul Reiser calling me?" So that's how good he was that I actually called Alan Arkin back.
That's great. Well, see, that was a possibility. I hung up on Alec Baldwin because I thought it was my friend Phil fucking around.
Yeah. You know, but the crazy thing is, by being in this business, sometimes you meet people. I remember when I was really new to town, when I was doing some benefit, and I'm like 26, 7, something like that. And I was going to be emceeing some charity benefit. And so they call you with, here's the introduction to when you introduce so-and-so. And one of the persons I was going to be introducing was Raquel Welch.
Hmm.
Well, for some reason, she had some notes that she wanted me to make sure that she got. So I get a call at home. Paul, this is Raquel Welch. I go, come on, stop. It's Raquel. I went, really? And all I can think is, like, where were you when I was 12? Because I would have just been such a happy 12-year-old boy if you had called at the time.
Yeah.
I'm still happy, but not as much. But yes. But anyway, so now have you watched? So there's Johnny on your own. Have you
seen it? I saw a clip. They sent me clips, and they sent me, I saw the opening where the kid from Nebraska writes a letter to Johnny Carson, gets on the bus, shows up to NBC at 11 o'clock. Look, I know the show's at 11:30, and there's nobody there. It's just the car.
You don't tape at 11 because it's on 11:30. Yeah, no, not in real life. So that's how green he is, and he shows up. But I will, because I know you're not going to figure out how to get Peacock because you're as dumb as I am. I'll get you a link. But anyway, enjoy. Thank you for having me, man. Good luck with this. Nice to chat with you again.
You too, my friend. Hopefully I'll see you soon.
You bet.
Best to you and the friend.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
The Adam Ferrara Podcast is brought to you by CruiseIntoWellness.com. And I have a special thanks to Rob at Cruise Into Wellness for sending my wife the CDB foot mask. Yes, 50 milligrams of CDB shoved right into your feet. Makes your wife very happy. They're like little socks full of goodness. They're refreshing, relaxing, a full broad spectrum. I don't know what that means. All I know is my wife said, I love this. And you can too. And I'll tell you what, 20% off with the coupon code ADAM. 20% off anything they have at CruiseIntoWellness.com. Go, feel better.
Hi, this is Paul Reiser, and that was 30 Minutes I'll Never Get Back.
I always love talking to Paul.
Yeah.
He's always got, every time I see him, he's always got a new story, and I'm always happy to hear it.
Yeah, I love people like that. You know, they always seem to just grab life, and, you know, they love life, and they
I think life just taps him on the shoulder going, hey, guess what? You're going to be in this movie.
And he goes along with it.
Yeah, Chuck, he's friends with Chuck Lorre. He's in that show. I'm friends with Phil Tagg. We're doing a podcast out of my garage. This is what we got. Well, but I do love the projects he gets involved with. I mean, this new, There's Johnny. They actually use clips from the old Tonight Show. So I think that's going to be good.
And how excited am I that there's a show about Johnny Carson? I'm just beside myself. And by the way, I have Peacock, so you don't have to get it.
I know you do, but I didn't even wait for that. I just said, Paul, I said, if you want me to see it, send me a link. And he did.
Oh, stop. Really?
He did. He sent me a link.
See, I had to go research it.
I didn't research shit. I go, Paul, send me. He goes, I'll send you a link. I said, okay, good. Yeah.
Plus, Phil will never invite you over to his house.
Phil won't invite me over to his house. No, I'll have to pee in a cup. He has to run some tests.
Yeah, I know.
I do watch TV with Phil. You know how we watch ESPN Plus? Because you get primetime.
Mark, it's a great show.
It's great. And I love it. And he gets primetime. This is how we end our football Sunday. Phil FaceTimes me and points the phone at his TV and hits ESPN Plus and we watch NFL primetime together. Every once in a while, his head pops up.
So you watching TV through his
His phone, watching ESPN Plus. As I hear him in the kitchen. I hear him like this going, maybe I'll have lentil soup tomorrow. What do you think?
Yep, I use the tripod. Yeah. I have a whole setup. It's like it's a friggin' studio.
I think it's clever.
Adam, this is all I'm going to say to you. It's $5 a month.
It doesn't matter. I'm not going to do it.
$5.
I do it with you because it annoys you. Every Sunday when the game's over, I go, come on, we watch this. I want to do this. I said, you won't set up your phone for your pal.
The guilt.
I was like, you're right, Phil. What am I asking for? Kidney? Jesus Christ.
Adam, mail him $5.
What? Yeah, I'll give you the $5.
Goodness.
I just thought it was crazy. I didn't know that Sylvester Stallone was almost Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop.
No, I didn't either. Crazy. I said George Burns, and I didn't get a laugh.
No, you didn't.
I laughed.
Yeah, but can you believe that?
Yeah.
I'm not watching that movie with Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah, it would have been like, hey, yo, you know, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe, you know?
You see, I would have watched that.
I wouldn't. Not me. I do. One of my favorite lines in that movie was when he's in the strip joint and he sees the bad guy and he plays drunk and he runs up to him.
Phil, is that you?
Phil, what's with the hostility?
You changed, man.
Man, did you have lentil soup for lunch? You stink, Phil. Your digestion ain't what it used to be. Do I have to move your ass again? Mark, Phil's going to suspend his COVID rules so I can come over and help him pack his dishes.
Of course.
He's going to mend them.
Yes.
Yep, well, just wear a mask. You're fine.
Yeah.
Well, that's what friends do.
Yeah, and they also fuck with you.
See?
You know what I mean? Even Paul Reiser's got it. He's got an atom. Yeah. He's got an atom.
Yeah, cleverly disguised as Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak.
Oh, Phil, you are so lucky I can't do voices.
I'd rather you do voices than make me wait. You, oh, my God. Mark, he plays the long con.
That's the best kind.
Yeah, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Remember the hat? Remember my favorite hat that was missing?
Oh, yeah. When you came. Oh, okay. So, Mark, I'm in Florida. I'm doing stand-up. And Phil has a crisis because it's Thursday. So
Phil, it's true.
Yeah. He's like, dude, I don't know if I can make. I don't know what. He shouldn't be left alone. I forget what the incident was. Maybe the lady who gave him his cleaning didn't look him in the eye and he's crushed. I don't know what it was. For some reason, my pal needed me. So I, okay, come on down. Flew him down to Florida, hung out he hung out with me while I did stand up. I was in an improv somewhere. We got to get on a plane. It's early in the morning. And he's looking for his hat and he can't find his favorite hat.
Yeah, I woke up. I'm like, "Where's my hat? Where's the hat that I wore on the plane here? It's my favorite hat. It was a baseball hat. I loved it, and I couldn't. Where is it? I can't find it."
So he couldn't find it. So and someone had sent me a swag bag of stuff, and in it was a hat with a rooster on it, and in small letters it said "cock."
Oh my God, I forgot. Of course about it did. That.
So of course I said, it did. So I said, "Phil, wear this. Brand new. Never been on my head."
I was flying that day. I didn't have time to go buy a hat. I'm not going to spend $50 for one in the airport. I had to put it on.
Right.
I'm wearing it on a plane, a hat that says cock on it. All right. Oh, my God. I can see people's faces. Why does your hat say cock?
They weren't saying that. They're saying get away from the cock hat.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't 100%. Sit next to the cock.
Yeah. Mothers are going, don't stare at the man. They're talking to their children. Don't.
Oh, and it looked horrendous. It looked like a farmer's hat.
It was a big trucker's hat with a big rooster on it.
It was awful. Yeah. Awful.
And you're wearing it.
Oh, man. He's wearing it on the plane. Oh, my God.
And whatever the emotional trauma was, he's walking home. So he's sad and depressed with a cock on his head.
Oh, my God. And then I get home, Mark, and I fire up my computer, and there's a video from him on my computer talking about everything's going to be okay. I know you feel lost right now, but things get lost and they get found. And he puts my hat on, the one that I lost. I'm like, you stole my hat. That's my hat. Dude, that was 10 years ago. Yeah. He's never given it to me.
It's still in my apartment in New York.
I have
somewhere.
Never seen that fucking hat again.
Yeah, you got the cock hat. You still got that, right?
Of course I do. It's a great story. Yeah, of course I do.
And what's the hat sitting on, Phil?
A porcelain cock.
Which one?
You sent me 20 of them.
I went through this thing where I just kept sending him these porcelain little statues of roosters, and they kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Oh, God. And he would get one like every couple of days. Then they started coming every day. And then the last one I sent them, it was about 3 feet high.
Oh my goodness! It's like a cock museum.
Yes. Yeah, museum of the cock. Yeah, and the last one that showed up was the one with the index card that you wrote. Here's what he wrote on the index card. You know. I still have it. I have that and all the cock. Well, actually, I got rid of most of the cocks. I have the one cock with the note.
And there will be in following him in the move.
Yes. Oh, great. Now I got to move that cock.
I'll tell you the other cool thing about Paul. I had no idea that he was a classical pianist, man.
Yeah.
That is unbelievable.
And he played the Beatles piano. Come on. He played the upright Lady Madonna piano, and he played the Let It Be piano. And he played them well.
That is so unbelievably cool. Yeah. I mean,
and he had Yoko Ono on the show.
I remember seeing that show.
Yeah.
I thought that was so well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was surprising to see her on that show.
Mm-hmm.
And then the way they did it, I was like, wow, she's a good sport.
Yeah. She had an awareness of her place in history.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she is a good sport. She was a good sport about that. And the way he talked about her, it was great because it humanized her. Mm-hmm. Because we all know, I mean, listen, I've never met Yoko, but we all know the story. It's like, oh, she's the one that broke up the Beatles. That's like the tag that she gets labeled with throughout history. And then you hear her talking and she goes, you know, John would really love this show.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you started thinking of John, not as John Lennon of the Beatles, but as John Lennon, you know, Yoko's husband, just a regular guy who enjoyed funny shows, you know, and it mm-hmm. was just, it just made him more human. It made her human. It just, I don't know. It was a really cool moment within that, man. I love that.
I like when he said, well, he was a married man. He didn't always listen to his wife. Yeah. He did listen when he said, all right, go to California. This is May Pang. She'll take you there.
Oh, the lost weekend.
The lost weekend.
That lasted 18 months.
Oh, my God. He goes out to California with his assistant, May Pang. He's Kennedy drunk the whole time. Him, Harry Nilsson, Keith Moon. They're all drinking and recording stuff.
By the way, you know, within that lost weekend, you know, of some of the craziest crap that they did, mm-hmm. they got in trouble in the studio where they're recording. Because one story was, well, somebody poured some liquor in there, but it wasn't liquor. Turned out it was somebody who had peed on the control board of the studio. And there's this very famous letter that Mr. Lennon, wrote to Phil Spector, who they were recording with at the time. And I have that letter right in front of me, not the actual letter, but I've got it, you know, right in front of me. And I just want to read it to you.
Okay. Does it start, dear Phil, put down the gun?
It does not. No. In fact, it's even better. First of all, it's written on a legal pad with like a red magic marker. Mm-hmm. At the very top of it, it says a matter of pee. Phil, see ye around 12:30. Should you not know, it was Harry and Keith. That's Harry Nilsson and Keith Moon, who pissed in the console. We left at 11:30! ! Jerry wants to evict us, or that's what Capital tells us. Tell him to bill Capital for the damage, if any. I can't be expected to mind adult rock stars. Nor can May. Besides, she works for me, not A&M. I'm about to piss off to Record Plant because of this crap. John, P.S., why does Leon not get any of this shit?
Okay.
So he ratted out Keith and Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Sold them out.
Completely.
Wait, I'm not going down for raindrops keep falling on my head. Or Keith Moon.
That is too cool, Mark. Where'd you get that letter?
It's online. It's like, it's one of those great legendary stories. You just search for it and it's right there. It's cool.
I'll post it so everyone can see it.
And by the way, do you know how much that letter sold for at auction?
Mm-mm.
Over $88,000. Some
wow.
random scribbles.
$88,000 because he wrote a note to a guy named Phil because his friends peed on a mixing board. My friend Phil took a dump in an apartment. Not a dime did I make.
That's yes. great.
Yes.
I want to thank Paul Reiser for being my guest. His new show on the Peacock, which Phil will tell you how to get, is called There's Johnny. Honey, if they want to get a hold of us, where do they go?
TheAdamFerrara@gmail.com.
And the show is growing, folks, and I want to thank you guys so much. If you could tell a friend, bring some more people into the family, we'd greatly appreciate it. As always, leave us a review. It helps us with our friend.
Mr. Algorithm.
And remember, life is hard. Take it easy on yourself. Pod has ended. Don't be. Well, you were running away from what was coming out of that room.
Yeah, because I knew. I just knew. And then about 10 seconds later, I hear, oh, my God. I went, oh, shit.
I don't have a nose, and I can smell it, too.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.